The reason why I built Chakra UI, I would say like my goal wasn't to make it open source earlier to start. My goal was literally to build something better than what I made before at the company that I worked for. And I wanted to go back to that same company again and say, hey guys, this is a better solution. Can you try it and see if it works better than what you had before? I'd love to see, just get your opinion and feedback.
That's Segun Adebayo, creator of Chakra UI. Instead of React components, you can use as building blocks in your own projects. He's also a creator of CareerLift, and this is the README podcast, a GitHub podcast that takes a peek behind the curtain at some of the most impactful open source projects and developers who make them happen. I am B. Dougie, aka Brian Douglas.
And I'm Kathy Korvac.
In every episode, Kathy and I invite a maintainer or open source developer into our studio to explore their work, their story, and where the two meet.
In this episode, we speak with Sejun, whose approach to computers and technology always started from an aesthetic perspective. He was interested in what the interface looked like and ways it can be improved. From his earliest days working on a computer, Sejun dove deep into the Adobe Creative Suite, believing that what we communicate is as important as how. With this in mind, he created Chakra UI, a component library for React applications. Originally from Nigeria, Sejun is now based in Dubai, where he brings his skill and insight to Scribe AI. We spoke about his first interactions with a computer, his passion for design, and his aspirations for the future. Let's start with the origin story.
When was the first time I used a computer? I think that's like my final year in uni. Yeah, and that was like the first time. It's very interesting because most of the time you probably would expect to say when I was 8 years old or when I was 10. But this was more like when I was like close to 17 or 18. So it's pretty, took quite some
while. Cool. How long ago was that? If you don't mind revealing your age a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably like close to somewhere between like 8 or 9 years ago, roughly, yeah.
Nice. So your first computer interaction, like your first time really using a computer, was 8 or 9 years ago. And you went from that, and 8 or 9 years later, you are building your own React UI open source framework. That is fast. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, thank you. I think most of that really just came from the hunger to actually own a computer. Because like for quite some time, since I was like 12 years old, I've always wanted to get my hands on like a computer. But at the time in Nigeria, we probably couldn't even afford to get a computer for me or my brother. So I just had to wait patiently, do most of the things on my phone. Just do like the Google search, just do everything like this very low 3G phone. And then when I got my hands on the computer the first week, I think I did quite an intensive amount of like overnight, just not sleeping, just like, oh my God, this is so exciting. I have a computer now. I'm going to search and do everything I couldn't do before.
Do you remember like what you did? What was blowing your mind about it?
Yeah, I think at the time, I had lots of friends that used to like do lots of Photoshop and Adobe Illustrator stuff then. So I used to be like very like curious to know like how do these guys do all of these nice effects and like brushes and like shadows and shiny objects in Photoshop. So I think the first thing I had to do then was like I tried to like figure out how to install this thing called Adobe Photoshop on my system. And I watched, I think it took me close to 48 hours nonstop of watching a YouTube tutorial on like the basics of Photoshop and how to use it. So that was like my first, the first software I ever used.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so like the idea of your cell phone or your mobile device being your first interaction, because you'd mentioned leveraging the phone to do a lot of this stuff. Can you explain more about that and your upbringing and like leveraging the internet in Nigeria prior to uni and getting a computer? Like what was the sort of things you had to sort of overcome to get online?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges I had at the time was just getting access to good internet. Honestly, I think that's usually like a big one if you're coming from Africa or even Nigeria in general. I mean, at some point, everyone has a story where it was really hard to get access to good internet and even just good devices and good computers in general. Yeah, so I would say that the way I struggled through this was basically like making friends. Yeah, just making friends and building good relationships with people around you. Of course, most of the time they either have their own laptops or they are willing to borrow you or just allow you use it for a few hours. So I just like go to my friend's room and just sit there, chit chat with them. Like, can you just borrow me a laptop for a second? I need to test something. And then I just spend the next 2 to 3 hours just doing my stuff. And then I go back to my room. And that's pretty much how it went for quite some time before getting my own laptop. Yeah.
And you would test, like, you would do designs and stuff on your friends' laptops?
Yeah. I remember installing Adobe Illustrator and just like, install that, like do a few design stuff just to practice, and then I go back again and go watch some YouTube videos, and I go practice again, and it just repeats itself just like that.
I feel like that is a that's also kind of blowing my mind that you would borrow your friend's laptop, install Adobe Illustrator, and start doing some work just for a few hours. Like, I think about how long it takes me to set up my dev machine, and it's like all day. I'm like, oh, I got a new machine, guys. See ya next week. You know, like that's totally blowing my mind that you did that.
Yeah, I think it was quite an interesting process. And I guess like those times really formed like the foundation of my own like work ethic and my life in general, because being able to see like challenges as not just like a way, like a limitation for you, but being able to see them as a way to just like figure out an alternative solution and don't just give up because the situation seems impossible. I guess that's literally like where that mindset started forming for me.
Finding alternative solutions is one of the basic premises of open source. And Shagun's initial love and interest in design remained throughout his years at university. While he didn't study design, opportunities arose that gave him a chance to expand and explore the tools that would eventually lead him to a whole array of projects, allowing him to hone his skills and build a foundation for growth.
I used to volunteer in a religious organization. So one of the things I had to do for them, or I volunteered to do for them, was to design brochures, flyers, business cards, and essentially any design-related things that they need. All right, so it was quite stressful. So like every week, I literally got like messages, hey, Sage, can you help us build like this nice banner design? I'm like, sure, no problem. I just got my laptop, so let's just do it. And I go and then I make those designs. So I think that really helped me. I did that consistently for about 2 years. So that really like helped me build like the muscles that I needed. And even when I was out of uni, I came back again to sort of teach the people that were there how to use these tools. So that really helped me like master the tools even more. And that was like my first intro into design. It started off as that journey for me. And then slowly, I remember the first time like someone I knew before that ended up becoming a potential client. I was literally challenged to, like, even doing all of this business card stuff and banner design and Photoshop stuff, which is really nice, but I really want someone to help me design a website in WordPress. Can you maybe help me do, like, the design for that? Like, let me see what if you can try. It doesn't matter. It's okay if you freak out or you think you cannot do it. So I was just like, okay, I really don't know so much about designing websites, but let me try. Again, I just go back to my practice. But this time, I don't have to use my phone. I just use my laptop, and then I go on YouTube tutorials how to design website UI using Photoshop or Adobe Illustrator. Essentially, I did not know that tools like Sketch or Figma, all of those tools did not exist at the time. Or even if they did, I probably was completely ignorant that they existed. So I stayed in my little world of Photoshop and Illustrator. And I think I did a pretty good job designing the website UI. And then they were like, can you maybe help us figure out how to make this come to life? Like, we're using WordPress and we have this nice page builder in WordPress. Can you maybe use that to help us bring this into life? And that was like, that was like where the nightmare came in for me, because I've never used WordPress, and like, I never really want to use WordPress after that experience, because I struggled a lot. Just trying to build something that you had to know HTML, you have to know CSS, you have to know a little bit of JavaScript as well to tweak some things the way they should be. So I literally like just declared bankruptcy on that one. I'm like, okay, I just did a little bit. I'm done with this web. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do my Photoshop stuff for now and web UI if I need to. I'll come back to some WordPress stuff some other time. I think one of the interesting patterns I've seen is the first time when you try to do something you're not familiar with is freaking hard. And you literally want to give up. And sometimes you even give up, which is sometimes it's fine, honestly. The only thing, though, is you have to go back to it again so you can actually build the muscle memory to actually learn the foundations and the fundamentals. So that's my first intro to web and all of this HTML, CSS, WordPress, and like all of these different ecosystem tools. Yeah.
The process for learning how to use these tools can be very frustrating, but it's also so important to get the basics down so that you can start doing more complicated and dynamic things. Despite his initial reservations, Sejun eventually did go back to HTML and CSS.
I remember like one of the first things I had to do before going back to WordPress, when I had another client that asked me to do WordPress stuff, I literally went to Codecademy and like took the HTML and CSS courses. I took a few courses as well on Udemy just to like learn most of the foundations, because I really wanted to know this stuff. Like, is this thing is not rocket science, right? Even though I studied mechanical engineering and I could use like Illustrator and Photoshop, the mere fact that I could do these things fairly easily means nothing is impossible here. So let's just try again and see where it leads us, right? So even though I ended up not going back to WordPress at the first try, I decided to learn the foundations of HTML, CSS, and I got stuck again in JavaScript. So that was like also another like blocker there. And I'm just like, okay, this thing is not as easy as I thought, because you have to know this jQuery thing. And then it's like, I just want to do JavaScript and now I need to know jQuery. Okay, I'm done for now. I'll come back to this again some other time.
Did you do something similar with jQuery when you were like, because there's kind of like a parallel between you started on WordPress and then you went back to HTML and CSS and then you were like, okay, I want interactions, and you started with jQuery. Did you go back to just vanilla JavaScript?
Yeah, I went back to vanilla JavaScript. So that was like my third attempt to get in. And I think this time around, it literally just like blew open the gate of my mind when I went back to JavaScript, because now I feel like I want to really know this thing for what it is. And at least master the foundations of this thing called JavaScript and a little bit of jQuery as well. So afterwards, I got very confident doing most of like WordPress or even plain old HTML, CSS websites, or like at some point there were other page builders like ClickFunnels, and I think there's also Squarespace. Yeah, I did quite a number of things with those other tools there.
Yeah.
And it was pretty exciting to see. I think I learned a lot.
There's so many times where we think we have mastered the tools, but there are always new tools to learn. And for Sejun, it's important not to be complacent, but to actually seek out new challenges.
If an opportunity does not come knocking at the door, you build one yourself and just like open it by yourself, right? So it's pretty interesting. So I think the challenges I've seen over and over again is basically around after a while, when I got into design and I started like focusing heavily on UI design, and I kind of just dropped most of the HTML and CSS stuff for quite some time. And then I took on the full-fledged role of product design. I want to be able to take a product from ideation to live production site as fast as possible. That was like my goal. And I joined the company to do that. And the biggest challenge I saw there is each time I did a UI design, it basically took almost two times or even three times the time it took me to design. It took that long for the engineers to actually produce the code, right? So it feels like, what's going on here? Like, I spent so much time trying to understand how to build, design this stuff. At the time, I learned Figma and Sketch, so that was like pretty easy for me to use. But because coming from the Photoshop and Illustrator days, like Figma and Sketch is sort of a breath of fresh air for those that are familiar with these tools, right? So I found it very easy to design UIs for mobile apps and for websites. But then the engineers or my engineering friends took almost two or three times how long it took me to make the design come to life in code, right? So this was another interesting challenge. And like at some point I knew that I I think at the company I worked in, our job was literally on the line because they're like, they're running out of money. They need to ship this product very soon. And then we're just taking this long time to ship the product. And then I had to talk to my friends, like, what is the bottleneck here? Like, what's causing the problem between, why is it taking so long to translate design to code? And it's like, at some point they're like, I mean, they're using some like UI library that's like pretty rigid. I think at the time, I'm not sure if it was Material UI or some other like bootstraps. Like, it's super hard to make it look like the design that you gave us because we have to like do lots of CSS and put a lot of important all over the place just to like override like styles and just to get it looking just right the way it looks in design. Right. So that's like the main bottleneck I saw. And then I was like, how can I help you guys solve this problem? Because one of the core principles I always have is, from when you do design, we tend to think about like having empathy for your users, customers, having empathy for the business, those who are going to sort of use the product. But less often, or I don't really see too much in practice that we have empathy for our colleagues, people who actually like take the work itself and transform that to code, right? So that was the first time I think I learned the principle of not just having empathy for the business or the customers, but for those around you and those that you work with, right? So I decided to ask them, like, what's the problem you're having here and how can I help make this stuff feel less, just let's just make this process seamless, as seamless as possible, essentially. So it took a long time, but it turned out to be that like building an entire design system and like a UI library in design first and then translating that to code actually like saved them a lot of time. And at the time it wasn't even Chakra UI, it was just like some dummy design system that I made. I'm like, okay, let's just try this thing. I'm trying to learn this thing called like design systems, and I'm reading lots of blogs and articles and watching videos. I just made this thing called like this UI kit in Figma. Can we just use this? Maybe use this as a guideline to help us make better decisions and actually build better UIs. And it started off as a suggestion. It turned out that the team really liked it, and it actually helped us like go faster. So I decided to I think at that time I took a bold step to quit my job. I wanted to focus on this problem for some time because it seemed like it would be like an interesting problem that not just my colleagues had, but somewhere around the world or someone else in Nigeria somewhere, or even just all over the world, it might be like a fairly common problem or challenge. So let me take some time to see if I can come up with something slightly better than what I had proposed at my previous company. From there on, it's sort of like the rest is history, and I'm sort of here right now.
Yeah, that's quite the path. You touched on something that I think is so cool and so important, which is not only having empathy for your users, but empathy for your colleagues. And one thing I love about that, and I don't know if you've thought about this, but or like if this is in your kind of philosophy for what you do with Chakra, but there's something about the way you talk about Chakra, which is like, we want to empower developers not only to build things that are accessible, but also build things faster and more compliant, more secure, etc. But there's the design component to it. And one thing I really love with you saying have empathy for your colleagues is that I imagine it can be so frustrating. I know it can be really frustrating when you have a lot of importance all over your CSS for me. And I feel almost like a little bit of a failure when that happens. Like, I feel bad about my code and bad about myself as a coder. So what I love about, you know, like that concept of feeling, getting it, having empathy for your colleagues, is that what you're doing is helping them feel better about themselves as coders. And I wonder if you feel the same way, or if that's like in kind of like part of the reason why you built Chakra.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think like this sort of goes way down to like one common advice my dad used to give me, which is essentially like when you find yourself in your place, you have to do everything in your power to make the place better each time, right? So which means like anywhere you go, just your goal is just to make a meaningful impact, so you'll never be forgotten. Like if you just come and do the work they tell you to do, you're essentially just like doing the bare minimum, and you're not leaving any meaningful impact there. So it literally came from the fact that, like, at the company that I used to work for, I think, like, one of the common patterns I start to see, especially in the product development process, is it starts to feel like design and development are sort of in some battle, or they're sort of, like, they're constantly involved in, like, arguments and, like, back and forth there. And it starts to feel like a competition of, like, who can ship this stuff faster. Design does it super fast and engineering is super slow. What's going on? And then it starts to feel like we are sort of like, there's a lot of friction between both parties, right? And one of the things I've learned is, instead of trying to compete with your coworkers, literally, that's why you're called coworkers or colleagues. You're meant to work together. You're meant to collaborate. So you're meant to literally feel the pulse of one another and know what's like, what's making you like struggle with your work and how can I help? Essentially, these are the two questions I like to ask a lot. Even for my friends. So I do that a lot, I mean, in life as well, not just at work. So, yeah, so that really informed, like, most of the decisions that I made or I put into Chakra UI. And I would say, really, like, the reason why I built Chakra UI was not really to, like, I would say, like, my goal wasn't to make it open source earlier to start. My goal was literally to build something better than what I made before at the company that I worked for. And I wanted to go back to that same company again and say, hey, guys, this is a better solution. Can you try it and see if it works better than what you had before? I'd love to see, just get your opinion and feedback. And the moment I sort of share it and show it to them, I could literally see, like, light bulbs come off their eyes. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so awesome. Like, I mean, I would never have to struggle with CSS. I would never have to, like, know about, like, keyboard navigation, accessibility, and all of these different things that are, like, so freaking hard to understand. And what makes it hard is not the fact that, like, it's technically hard. What makes it difficult is the fact that you have a product to ship and you have a deadline to meet at work. And, like, taking a detour to fix all of these different aspects is quite something, and you definitely not meet your target. And ultimately, you get fired if you want to start doing all of those kind of things. So so I feel like that really, like, resonated with them, and they really loved it. And I think just that small interaction made me feel like if you build something and you have, like, I call it, like, a minimum viable audience, which is, like, a small group of people who use your product, and they feel really excited, and you can literally see them, like, super happy about what you made. I think that's enough to actually make you feel like this is a meaningful product and this is going to make an impact. So so that really gave me the courage to say, okay, if this can make this small group of friends who have been in the front-end development space for close to 5 to 10 years, you can make them happy, there's a high chance it'll be meaningful for someone out there as well. So let's just put it out and see what comes off.
When Shagun launched Chakra on Twitter, the response was resounding and overwhelming. But the process leading up to that moment wasn't necessarily straightforward, and it took a fair bit of bravery and trust.
A lot of things went through my mind just before hitting that button, honestly, and I can tell you, I think, like, so after showing it to this, my colleagues, and I told them about the possibility of making this open source, one of the consistent response I got was like, are you really sure you want to do this? Like, the open source space is not, it's not that forgiving, essentially. If you put something out there that doesn't make sense, you literally see people on social media bullying you and, like, telling you that this is crap. You don't want that in your life right now. I think you should just, like, just do your design stuff and help people from time to time. Essentially, what I could understand from that is, like, the response I got, the way I interpreted that was more like, just fit in and don't, like, try to go beyond your comfort zone. That's, like, the way I interpreted that. And honestly, that was very, like, anti my own personal principles. Right? So I wanted to just go against that and see, like, what happens. Essentially, I was fine if anyone told me that this doesn't make sense. I'm like, oh, cool. At least I have my colleagues here that use it and they're happy with it. So might not be for you, so that's completely fine. So, like, I had to literally talk myself into, like, what could possibly happen or what could possibly go wrong before I hit this tweet button. So I wrote a tweet I think I wrote it close to like 3 days before hitting the tweet button. But like each day, just to press that tweet button, literally, I just got quite nervous, honestly. That was because before that, I never had any experience with open source, or I've never used GitHub that extensively. It was essentially my first time just like using GitHub for what it is, and actually building a community and building an open source project. So I'm not sure I had a project on GitHub at the time as well. So it's like the first thing I'm putting out there. I feel like this might turn out to be a huge failure. But then I think what really gave me some sort of like comfort is essentially that like there's this rule of thumb I always have in my mind, which is the fact that like failure or innovation and failure is essentially like they are inseparable twins, right? So you cannot do anything innovative without the fear of failure, because you're trying to do something that might not work. And having the courage to do something that might not work in the face of everyone discouraging you is essentially what I would term like a courageous person or an innovator. So I just wanted to take that leap of faith there, and I just hit the tweet button. I think what I did after hitting the tweet button, I turned off my notifications. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. So I literally just like put my phone on airplane mode, and I told my friends that the day that I released this library publicly, I would love to celebrate that, no matter how small it is. So we took ourselves out to McDonald's and just like, let's just get some nice burgers and just like celebrate this little thing that I've made. Right, so I literally put my phone off because I was super nervous. And like, I think one of my friends could see that I was super nervous and just challenged me to just turn on your notification. Like, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, most people say they don't like it. Fine, you just delete the tweet and move on. So I just decided to put it on. And what I saw was quite surprising. I could see that like quite a number of people in the community retweeted that. And I think I remember a few of them. I think I remember Prosper from the community, even Guillermo from Vassell and Ryan Florence. I saw that they took that and retweeted it. I was really like impressed and happy. I guess that was like my first Twitter and like GitHub and community experience. So that was quite meaningful. And obviously, the side effect of that being that like as more people start to see it, more people want to jump on it right away. And then it's like people are filing issues at the speed of light just because you released this new library. And I think I spent the next 2 to 3 days without much sleep just fixing issues and like trying to get it to be stable.
Sejun is so spot on. True innovation comes with risk, which can mean the potential to fail, but also a great potential to succeed. Chakra was well received and inevitably led to a lot of work. Sejun knew that this might be the case, but it was hard to really predict, and it certainly came as a surprise.
After spending the next like 1 to 3 days just like closing out issues, responding to pull requests, and like this is quite a lot of work. I never saw this coming. So like, and then the issue number keeps growing. At some point I tried my best to keep the issue numbers below like 20, and like each time I try to take it down from 20 to 0, it grows back up to 25 or 30. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, I mean, I feel like what I built is pretty good enough and works for most use cases. But then that's not the truth, obviously. People tend to use your projects in ways you don't expect, and they have certain expectations of what you build. And if it does not work that way to them, it's a bug. Right? So they just like open issues and try to see like if you could help them fix it. Right? So I'd say I also got slightly introduced to this, I'd say, semi-toxic part of like open source projects, which is essentially people telling you that like, if you don't fix this thing, I'm not going to use your library. You have to fix this right away. And I think essentially at that point, I literally logged off GitHub for a few days. And it's like, no one can put you under pressure for what you built. Like, this is a free open source project. The code base and the source code is open for you to see, and you can contribute to it, because I literally wrote all the code there from a much more like beginner mindset. trying to solve a meaningful problem. So that means that you're not going to see any magic in the code base. It's fairly like someone that's just trying to like be as simple as possible. So that's what you're going to see if you check the code base. So that means it's fairly easy to contribute to the project. So I'll just appreciate more like contributions or pull requests if you want to see anything fixed there. So that was like my initial stance. And when I came back from taking a break, I just evaluated some of the issues and tried to prioritize. I think that's like that's a meaningful skill that I had to learn, which is not all issues are equal, not all bug reports are equal. You have to tend to sort of prioritize them, which ones are bugs. And this is where like GitHub really shines, being able to tag or label issues and pull requests. So this is high priority. This is low priority. This is a bug. This is just a question. We can close it if we answer the question. That really helped me just like get comfortable, just keeping the project alive for some time. Yeah.
Cool. I have so many questions about that. So you mentioned this kind of twice. When you get a little maybe overwhelmed or nervous, you shut your notifications off. So you shut your Twitter notifications off. You took a break from GitHub. And we had another guest on the show, Gina, that kind of talked about this from a maintainer's perspective. When you get overwhelmed or frustrated or pissed off at some of the contributors or some of the responses, she actually keeps a punching bag in her office and she'll go and kind of take out her aggression on the punching bag. And that helps her through it. Is there anything, you know, like I think taking a break is a really, really great thing to do, kind of taking a breath. Do you have any other advice for people going through a similar situation?
Yeah, it's really like, I think this is quite like a more like personal like response, like how you respond to stress and anger and anxiety. I think it varies from person to person. I can only tell you like what I do personally. It might not work for you. That's the sad part there. But what I do essentially is to just like turn off all my notifications, right? So even to date, I have like some notifications turned off. Even now that I'm not like I'm not stressed or I don't have anxiety or things like that. So what I typically recommend is to like leave your laptop and go out. Go have some fun with your friends. Essentially, fun that will make you laugh. Because one of the things I've seen is like when you're in a stress state, you basically don't want to laugh. You're just like super like straight and like super cold. If anyone comes around you and they're trying to like make you laugh or say something funny, you're just like, dude, you don't know what I'm going through in your mind. It's like, you cannot just be saying serious stuff around me because I'm so tired and I'm so drained. Right? So I prefer to just do more like high energy activities, like go out, take a long walk, go watch something funny or do some really scary exercise that literally like shake off like all of the funny feelings that you used to have. So here in Dubai, there's quite a lot of things to do. So like I just like call a few of my friends and we just do some any crazy stuff, any crazy activity around that we can go for that literally like rack everyone up and make us all laugh and just help me forget all of that stress. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. You said something else that I just think is brilliant because I'm a product manager and I loved this. Minimum viable audience. And I wonder if there's something to that that you can kind of talk about a little bit for us that might, you know, if you release something new, a beta or whatever, to the smallest amount of people, maybe that helps alleviate some of the pressure and some of the overwhelm that might come from that. And so the product manager in me is itching for you to expand on what that means. How many people makes a minimum viable audience?
Yeah, I think that answer varies also because sometimes I hate to say that the answer varies because that's like the ultimate answer to almost any question. It depends. So when you have an idea, right, essentially you have this idea you want to bring to the world. Maybe you've seen existing solutions before and you're trying to make something and you want to put it out there in the world. There's usually an assumption that you make, right? So you're making an assumption that, hey, maybe the way CSS used to work is not it's not user-friendly, and I want to just try to invent like some new way of writing CSS that makes it like really easy for people to ship products. So let's assume that's the idea that you have there. That idea makes certain assumptions, and it's only fair and it's only right for you to think that this my idea might be wrong. Right. So the goal is you're not looking for the idea that is the ultimate and works every time. You're only trying to provide an initial hypothesis to say, what if we could write CSS this way? Would it maybe make a meaningful change, or would it help people ship products faster? Right. So the idea here is not to be right at first. You could be wrong, but the goal is to be less wrong over time, right? And through feedback and iteration, you'd probably be able to like knock off all of the wrong sides of your idea, and I mean, eventually transform that into something meaningful, right? So the reason why I say that is like because you already have the mindset that this your idea might be wrong, you want to find like a few people that are very open-minded. They're not like super critical people that will judge you and judge your idea. There's so many people out there like that, right? So you want to find like the few friends that you have that know enough to give you quality feedback and about this your idea and hypothesis. So that's what I would say makes up like this this minimum viable audience. Essentially, these few people that are open-minded people that are not afraid to tell you whether they like it or they don't like it, and also people that are able to support you to make sure this your idea works out there. So I had just like, I think like close to like four or five friends that I could reach out to. They were all front-end engineers. And I think one of them was like full stack. So I consider them like my minimum viable audience because I could trust them. I trust that when I tell them my idea, they don't try to take that and maybe trash my idea or say I'm not a smart person or talk down at you, essentially. So you want people that would help you, empower you, and actually want you to succeed. So that's what I mean when I say like the minimum viable audience, especially as it pertains to open source, because like there's a high chance that your colleague might need that open source library you want to make. So it's always good to just like have a quick chat with them to get that pulse, whether this idea might make sense or not. So I think that really helped me when I started getting that initial feedback. Eventually, the feedback turned out to be really good for me, like super positive, and there's like almost no negative side to that. So that gave me the courage to actually continue in this direction and just make that go live.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Excellent.
Cool. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you so much for having me. I think I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
It's been so fun to speak with Segun and have him on the Remi podcast. To learn more about Segun and Chakra, please visit chakra-ui.com. If you're curious to learn more about Segun, read his story in the README project. Just go to github.com/README. I'm Brian Douglas, and I'm a developer advocate here at GitHub.
And I'm Kathy Korovec, and I work in product. The README podcast is a GitHub podcast that dives into the challenges our guests faced along the way and how they overcame those hurdles. In sharing these stories, we hope to provide a spotlight on what you don't always see in the lines of code and what it took to build the technology that inspires us all.
It's been great spending time with you. The README podcast is part of the README project at GitHub, a space that amplifies the voices of the developer community, the maintainers, leaders, and the teams whose contributions move the world forward every day. Visit github.com/README to learn more. Our theme music has been produced on GitHub by Dan Gorelick with Tidal Cycles. Additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. The README podcast is produced by Sound Made Public for GitHub. This episode is the final one in season one. We love talking to such inspirational, smart, and fun people, and we look forward to doing more of that in the future. So follow us on Twitter or LinkedIn to get more updates on this podcast and all things GitHub. Thanks for listening.